Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It's February 16th, 2026. I want to start today by just asking you to check in on a feeling. You know, when you woke up this morning, grabbed your phone, did the internet feel a little bit heavy, like you were wading through molasses?
It's definitely not just you. We're all seeing more of those verify you are human boxes, right? More login walls and just, yeah, a general sluggishness to the whole open web.
Right. It feels locked down and at the same time flooded with traffic we can't even see. I was reading through the stack of reports you sent over, and it honestly feels like we're living in the aftermath of a silent explosion.
Silent explosion is a really good way to put it. We're essentially doing an autopsy today. We're looking at the corpse of the, you know, the old internet and trying to figure out what happened. And the cause of death, according to all this data, is a massive, unprecedented data war.
A data war. That sounds so dramatic, but looking at these numbers, it might be an understatement. We're talking about Chinese AI giants just hoovering up the entire cloud.
It's less of a hoover and more of a strip mining operation, really. We're seeing this coordinated effort to harvest the raw material of the internet, which is just human-created data to fuel their AI ambitions. But this isn't just about computers talking to computers. This is about hidden infrastructure, bot armies, and a total shift in web economics.
Okay, so let's get into the who before we get into the how, because when I hear bot armies, I think of generic spam, but these have specific names. Who are the generals in this war?
The telemetry data is pointing to three main players: DeepSeek, ByteDance, you know, TikTok's parent company, and Alibaba. And to understand why it's all happening now, you have to look at the sheer scale of the demand.
I saw a number in that DeepSeek report that just made my jaw drop. Something about 5.7 billion calls.
Right. So let's clarify that. In 2025, DeepSeek's models were getting about 5.7 billion API calls a month from users. That's the demand side. People asking their AI billions of questions. And to answer those questions, the AI needs to know, well, basically everything.
So because they have billions of questions to answer, they have to go out and read the entire internet to find the answer.
Exactly. They can't license that much data, not fast enough. So they turn to scraping. The reports are showing scraper traffic from these companies is up over 300% year over year coming into 2026. They are literally eating the web to feed the AI's brain.
Eating the web is a terrifying image. Okay, but let's talk about the specific bots, because they seem to have different personalities. I kept saying the name Byte Spider in the logs.
Byte Spider. That's ByteDance's proprietary crawler. And calling it a crawler is almost too polite. This thing is a beast. In early 2026, it was causing traffic surges of 450% on U.S. news aggregators.
450%. So if I run a news site, suddenly I have 4.5 times the traffic, but none of it is human.
Correct. And ByteSpider is really sophisticated. It's not just grabbing text. It's scraping video metadata. It's mapping out interaction graphs from YouTube and X. It's trying to understand how humans interact, not just what we write.
So it's watching us watch videos to teach its algorithm how to be more like us.
That's the goal. A multimodal understanding of the world. Then you've got Alibaba, who's being a bit more deceptive. They've been caught mimicking OpenAI's GPT bot.
Wait, they're dressing up as the other guys?
Essentially, yeah. They use the same user agent string, that's like the ID card a bot shows a website, to confuse webmasters. So if you block Chinese bots but you allow OpenAI, Alibaba just slips right through the door wearing a fake mustache.
That feels incredibly aggressive. Why the big rut? I mean, scraping has always been a thing, but why this explosion right now?
It's the hardware deficit. Think about the chip bans the U.S. put in place. We cut off their supply of the absolute top-tier NVIDIA chips.
Right, the H100s.
Exactly. So if you're a Chinese tech giant, you can't win on raw computing power because you literally can't buy the best brains. So how do you compete? You win on curriculum. You feed your slightly slower brain way more data than the other guys. Data becomes the great equalizer. It's an asymmetric response to a hardware blockade.
That is fascinating. So they're brute forcing intelligence by just consuming more information than anyone else. But here's where I get stuck. The internet has rules. We have robots.txt. We have a kind of social contract. Why isn't that stopping them?
And that is the absolute crux of the issue. That social contract of the web. It's dead. It died quietly, but we're all just now smelling the rot.
Okay, walk me through that. What was the contract?
Well, go back to the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
The deal was symbiotic. I run a website, I write an article, Google comes along with its bot. I let the bot in because Google is like a taxi driver.
Yeah.
Picks up passengers, users, and drives them to my website.
So I get traffic, Google gets to organize information, win-win.
Exactly. But these new AI bots, DeepSeek, ByteSpider, they're not taxi drivers. They're carjackers.
Carjackers.
They come to your site, They take the content and they leave your site on the side of the road. The passenger never even shows up. They don't want to send you traffic. They want to become you. They want to answer the user's question right in the chat window so the user never have to visit your site in the first place.
So the incentive to let them in is zero.
It's less than zero. It's negative. And that's why the contract broke. But since the AI companies know you won't let them in willingly, they stopped asking. They just started taking.
And is that what explains the GitHub purge I read about in the notes?
That was the big wake-up call. Almost overnight, Chinese scrapers downloaded something like 80% of public repositories on GitHub, just vacuumed up millions of lines of code to train their coding assistants, and the developers who wrote that code never consented to fueling a competitor's product.
It's like someone walking into a public library, throwing all the books into a wood chipper to make their own paper, and then selling that paper back to people outside.
That is a disturbingly accurate analogy.
So we know who is doing it and why, but I really want to get into the how, because I know a little bit about web security. If I see a million requests coming from a data center in Beijing, I just block the IP address. How are they getting around that?
But they don't come from a data center. They come from your neighbor's house. This is where we get into residential proxy networks. This is the stealth backbone of the whole operation. The bots route their traffic through residential IP addresses, ISPs like Comcast, AT&T, or BT in London.
Wait, hold on. How does ByteDance get permission to route its traffic through my grandma's iPad in Ohio?
They don't ask for permission. Or, well, they ask, and your grandma says yes without knowing it.
How?
Have you ever downloaded a free VPN app or, you know, one of those free flashlight apps back in the day? Sketchy memory booster?
I mean, I try not to, but...
Right. A lot of these free apps have a little bit of software and SDK buried in their code.
Mm-hmm.
And in the terms of service, you know, in paragraph 400 that nobody ever reads, it says something like, in exchange for this free service, you agree to let us use your device as a proxy node when it's idle.
No way.
Yes, way. So you put your phone on the charger, the screen goes dark, and suddenly your device is a relay point. ByteDance sends a request to your phone sends it to the New York Times, and the New York Times sees an IP address from a home in Ohio and thinks, oh, that's a person, and serves the page.
And then my phone sends all that data back to ByteDance.
Precisely. And they rotate these IPs constantly. The data says ByteDance is rotating through 1 million of these IPs per hour. They use providers like Bright Data and Oxy Labs to manage this. It's a hydra. You cut off one head, you block one IP, and 10 more pop up from different cities.
That makes me want to go delete every single app on my phone. But it's not just the IP address, is it? The behavior itself is getting spookily human.
It is. They're using tools called headless browsers. The big one is called Puppeteer.
I've heard of that. It's for testing websites, right?
It was, originally. It lets a computer run Chrome without any of the visuals. But these scrapers are weaponizing it. They don't just download the HTML code anymore. They actually render the page. They execute the JavaScript.
But what about the defenses, Cloudflare, the I am not a robot puzzles?
The bots are solving them or just bypassing them. They can spoof their fingerprints, things like your screen resolution, your battery level, even your mouse movement speed. They can even carry over cookies from a real browsing session. So to the website's defense system, it just looks like a normal user who's been browsing for 20 minutes. It doesn't look like a bot attack at all.
That is terrifyingly sophisticated. It feels like an arms race where the defense is always two steps behind.
It is an arms race. But here's the problem. War is expensive. And right now, the victims are the ones paying the bill.
The bandwidth apocalypse? I saw that term in the outline.
Let's put a human face on this. Imagine you're a small publisher. You run a popular knitting blog. You have a great community, maybe 10,000 visitors a month. And you pay for hosting based on your traffic.
Okay, so I budget for my 10,000 knitters.
Right. Then, one Tuesday, DeepSeek decides your blog is essential training data for its new model. Suddenly, you get hit with 500,000 requests in 1 hour.
My server crashes.
Your server crashes, your site goes offline, and then at the end of the month, Amazon Web Services sends you a bill for all that bandwidth. You might owe, what, $2,000 for traffic that didn't generate a single cent of revenue?
That's bankrupting.
It is. The New York Times can afford enterprise-grade defenses like Casada. They can fight back. But the indie web, the small bloggers, they are collateral damage. And get this, Casada reports that ByteSpider scrapes at 25 times the rate of OpenAI's GPT bot and 3,000 times the rate of Anthropic's Claude bot.
3,000 times? That's not a crawler. That's a DDoS attack.
It's a volume attack. And the economic asymmetry is brutal. It costs the bot operator almost nothing to send a request. It costs the website owner real money to serve it.
So the small players either die out or they lock everything down.
Which brings us to the Dark Forest.
I love this theory. Well, I hate it, but I love the name. It's from sci-fi, right?
Lou Sixon's The Three-Body Problem, yep. The idea is that the universe is a dark forest full of silent hunters. If you light a fire, if you make yourself visible, you get wiped out. So the only way to survive is to stay completely silent.
And we're seeing that happen to the web.
We are. The open web, the whole idea that you can just click a link and read something, is dying. Because being open is now a liability.
Mm-hmm.
If you're open, you get scraped, you get cloned, you get bankrupted by bandwidth costs.
So what's the response? I mean, I feel like I'm seeing it already. Login walls.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Exactly. The prediction in these reports is that by the end of this year, 2026, 70% of high-value content will be behind a login screen. Medium, Reddit, Substack, they're all building walls, not just to make money, but to stop the bots.
So the internet stops being a library and starts being a collection of private clubs?
A collection of vaults.
Yeah.
And the spaces between the vaults, the public web, that becomes what researchers are calling the sludge layer, AI-generated noise. Bots. Talking to bots. SEO spam generated by one AI trying to game another. The prediction is that by 2028, 80% of the public web could be AI-generated.
That is so bleak. So if I want to talk to a real human or read something a human actually wrote, I have to be inside the walls.
That's the cozy web concept. We retreat. We go to Discord servers, WhatsApp groups, private Slack channels. We go where the spiders can't follow us.
It's weirdly full circle, isn't it? The internet started as these small, disconnected nodes. Then it became this massive, open, global brain. And now, because of this data war, it's fracturing back into small, disconnected nodes again.
It is. And there's a geopolitical angle to that sludge layer, too. We mentioned data sovereignty earlier.
Right. If the AI eats the sludge, what does it learn?
Exactly. If you control the scrapers, you control the data set.
Yeah.
If Alibaba's models are trained on a specific subset of the web filtering out things they don't like, prioritizing state-approved narratives, then the AI they build is going to have a very specific worldview.
The sources mentioned Alibaba's Qwen model doing that.
Yeah. Researchers found it has a constructive bias regarding China. It just avoids certain sensitive historical topics. If that model becomes the dominant engine for half the world, you've successfully exported your narrative dominance on a massive scale.
So it's not just about stealing data. It's about shaping reality for the next generation of users.
Precisely. The winner of the data war gets to define what truth is for the AI age.
You know, when we started this, I thought we were just talking about slow internet speeds. But this is fundamental. We're watching the enclosure of the digital commons.
We are. The whole era of the boundless prairie of information is over. We're entering the era of the fortress.
So let's bring this home for everyone listening who is just trying to browse the web without a headache. We've covered the anchor, that massive demand from DeepSeek and ByteDance. We've covered the setup, the betrayal of that old social contract.
We looked at the tech, the residential proxies that might be hiding in your flashlight app.
And the economics, how the little guys are paying the price for the AI giant's hunger.
All of which leads us to the dark forest, a future where all the good stuff is locked away and the public square is just bots shouting at each other.
It really makes you rethink that verify you are human checkbox, doesn't it? It's not just an annoyance anymore. It's a border crossing.
It is. It's the gate to the sanctuary.
So here's my final thought for you to chew on today. If the open web dies to starve the bots, if we all retreat into our private Discords and paid newsletters, what happens to serendipity? What happens to just stumbling across a random blog from a stranger that changes your life? If we lose the open in open web, do we lose the very thing that made the internet magic in the first place?
That's the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it? Are we building a smarter world or just a lonelier one?
Something to think about the next time you decline cookies. Thanks for diving deep with us. Stay human out there.
See you next time.